Chapter 48. The Blight. The wind whipped Lan's cloak, sometimes making him hard to see, even in the sunlight, and Ingtar and the 100 lances Lord Agelmar had sent to escort them to the border, in case they met a Trolloc raid, made a brave display in double column with their armor and their red pennants, and their steel-clad horses led by Ingtar's gray owl banner. They were easily as grand as 100 of the Queen's guards, but it was the towers just inside ahead of them that Ran studied. He had had all morning to watch the Shinaran lances. Each tower stood tall and solid atop a hill, half a mile from its neighbor. East and west others rose, and more beyond those. A broad, walled ramp spiraled around each stone shaft, winding all the way around by the time it reached the heavy gates, halfway to the crenellated top. A sortie from the garrison would be protected by the wall until it reached the ground, but enemies striving to reach the gate would climb under a hail of arrows and stones and hot oil from the big kettles poised on the outward flaring ramparts above. A large steel mirror, carefully turned down, away from the sun now, glittered atop each tower below the high iron cup where signal fires could be lit when the sun did not shine. The signal would be flashed to towers further from the border, and by those to still others, and so relayed to the Heartland fortresses, from where the lances would ride to turn back the raid. Were times normal, they would. From the two nearest tower tops, men watched them approach, just a few men on each, peering curiously through the crenels. In the best of times, the towers were only manned enough for self-defense, depending more on stone walls than strong arms to survive. But every man who could be spared, and more, was riding to Tarwyn's Gap. The fall of the towers would not matter if the lances failed to hold the gap. Rand shivered as they rode between the towers. It was almost as if he had ridden through a wall of colder air. This was the border. The land beyond looked no different from Shinar, but out there, somewhere beyond the leafless trees, was the Blight. Ingtar lifted a steel fist to halt the lances short of a plain stone post inside of the towers. A border post marking the boundary between Shinar and what once was Malkir. "Your pardon, Moraine Aes Sedai. Pardon, Daishan. Pardon, Builder. Lord Agelmar commanded me to go no further." He sounded unhappy about it, disgruntled at life in general.
"That is as we planned, Lord Agelmar and I," Moraine said.
Ingtar grunted sourly. "Pardon, Aes Sedai," he apologized, not sounding as if he meant it. "To escort you here means we may not reach the gap before the fighting is done. I am robbed of the chance to stand with the rest, and at the same time I am commanded not to ride one step beyond the border post, as if I had never before been in the Blight. And my Lord Agelmar will not tell me why." Behind the bars of his face guard, his eyes turned the last word into a question to the Aes Sedai. He scorned to look at Rand and the others. He had learned they would accompany Lan into the Blight.
"He can have my place," Matt muttered to Rand.
Lan gave them both a sharp look. Matt dropped his eyes, his face turning red.
"Each of us has his part in the pattern, Ingtar," Moraine said firmly. "From here we must thread ours alone."
Ingtar's bow was stiffer than his armor made it.
"As you wish it, Aes Sedai. I must leave you now, and ride hard in order to reach Tarwyn's Gap. At least I will be allowed to face Trollocs there."
"Are you truly that eager," Nynaeve asked, "to fight Trollocs?"
Ingtar gave her a puzzled look, then glanced at Lan, as if the warder might explain.
"That is what I do, lady," he said slowly. "That is why I am."
He raised a gauntleted hand to Lan, open palm, toward the warder.
"Saravya ninto mashima taishite, Daishan. Peace, favor your sword."
Pulling his horse around, Ingtar rode east with his bannermen and his 100 lances. They went at a walk, but a steady pace, as fast as armored horses could manage with a far distance yet to go.
"What a strange thing to say," Egwene said. "Why do they use it like that? Peace."
"When you have never known a thing except to dream," Lan replied, heeling Mondarb forward, "it becomes more than a talisman." As Rand followed the warder past the stone border post, he turned in his saddle to look back, watching Ingtar and the lances disappear behind barren trees, and the border post vanish.
And last of all, the towers on their hilltops looking over the trees. All too soon they were alone, riding north under the leafless canopy of the forest. Rand sank into watchful silence, and for once even Matt had nothing to say. That morning the gates of Faldara had opened with the dawn. Lord Aglamar, armored and helmeted now like his soldiers, rode with the Black Hawk banner and the three foxes from the east gate toward the sun, still only a red sliver above the trees. Like a steel snake undulating to mounted kettledrums, the column wound its way out of the town four abreast, Aglamar at its head, hidden in the forest before its tail left Faldara Keep. There were no cheers in the streets to speed them on their way, only their own drums and their pennants cracking in the wind. But their eyes looked toward the rising sun with purpose. Eastward they would join other steel serpents from Falmoran, behind King Isar himself with his sons at his side, and from Ancor Dale, that held the eastern marches and guarded the spine of the world. From Mos Shirara, and Fal Sion, and Camran Khan, and all the other fortresses in Shinar, great and small. Joined into a greater serpent, they would turn north to Tarwin's Gap. Another exodus had begun at the same time, using the King's Gate that led out on the way to Falmoran. Carts and wagons, people mounted and people afoot, driving their livestock, carrying children on their backs, faces as long as the morning shadows. Reluctance to leave their homes, perhaps forever, slowed their feet, yet fear of what was coming spurred them, so that they went in bursts, feet dragging, then breaking into a run for a dozen paces, only to fall back once more, to shuffling through the dust. A few paused outside the town to watch the soldiers' armored line winding into the forest. Hope blossomed in some eyes, and prayers were muttered. Prayers for the soldiers, prayers for themselves, before they turned south again, trudging. The smallest column went out of the Malkir Gate. Left behind were a few who would remain, soldiers and a sprinkling of older men, their wives dead and their grown children making the slow way south. A last handful so that whatever happened in Tarwin's Gap, Faldara would not fall undefended. Ingtar's gray owl led the way, but it was Moraine who took them north. The most important column of all, and the most desperate. For at least an hour after they passed the border post, there was no change in land or forest. The water kept them at a hard pace, as fast a walk as the horses could maintain, but Rand kept wondering when they would reach the Blight. The hills became a little higher, but the trees and the creepers and the underbrush were no different than what he had seen in Shinar, gray and all but leafless. He began to feel warmer, warm enough to sling his cloak across the pommel of his saddle. "This is the best weather we've seen all year," Egwene said, shrugging out of her own cloak. Nynaeve shook her head, frowning as if listening to the wind. "It feels wrong." Rand nodded. He could feel it too, though he could not say what it was exactly he was feeling. The wrongness went beyond the first warmth he could remember out of doors this year. It was more than the simple fact that it should have been so warm this far north. It must be the Blight. But the land was the same. The sun climbed high, a red ball that could not give so much warmth despite the cloudless sky. A little while later, he unbuttoned his coat. Sweat trickled down his face. He was not the only one. Matt took his coat off, openly displaying the golden ruby dagger, and wiped his face with the end of his scarf. Blinking, he rewound the scarf into a narrow band low over his eyes. Nynaeve and Egwene fanned themselves. They rode slumped as if they were wilting. Loyal undid his high-collared tunic all the way down, and his shirt as well. The Ogier had a narrow strip of hair up the middle of his chest, as thick as fur. He muttered apologies all around.
"You must forgive me. Steading Shangtai is in the mountains and cool."
His broad nostrils flared, drawing in air that was becoming warmer by the minute.
"I don't like this heat and damp."
It was damp, Rand realized. It felt like the mire in the depths of summer, back in the Two Rivers. In that boggy swamp, every breath came as if through a wool blanket soaked in hot water. There was no soggy ground here, only a few ponds and streams, trickles to someone used to the waterwood. but the air was like that in the mire. Only Perrin, still in his coat, was breathing easily. Perrin and the warder. There were a few leaves now, on the trees that were not evergreen. Rand reached out to touch a branch and stopped with his hand short of the leaves. Sickly yellow mottled the red of the new growth, and black flecks like disease.
I told you not to touch anything.
The warder's voice was flat. He still wore his shifting cloak, as if heat made no more impression on him than cold. It almost made his angular face seem to float unsupported above Mondarb's back.
Flowers can kill in the blight, and leaves maim. There's a little thing called a stick that likes to hide where the leaves are thickest, looking like its name, waiting for something to touch it. When something does, it bites. Not poison. The juice begins to digest the stick's prey for it. The only thing that can save you is to cut off the arm or leg that was bitten. But a stick won't bite unless you touch it. Other things in the blight will.
Rand jerked his hand back, leaves untouched, and wiped it on his pants leg.
Then we're in the blight, Perrin said.
Strangely, he did not sound frightened.
Just the fringe, Lan said grimly.
His stallion kept moving forward, and he spoke over his shoulder.
The real blight still lies ahead. There are things in the blight that hunt by sound, and some may have wandered this far south. Sometimes they cross the mountains of doom. Much worse than sticks. Keep quiet and keep up if you want to stay alive.
He continued to set a hard pace, not waiting for an answer.
Mile by mile, the corruption of the blight became more apparent. Leaves covered the trees in ever greater profusion, but stained and spotted with yellow and black, with livid red streaks like blood poisoning. Every leaf and creeper seemed bloated, ready to burst at a touch. Flowers hung on trees, and weeds in a parody of spring, sickly pale and pulpy, waxen things that appeared to be rotting while Rand watched. When he breathed through his nose, the sweet stench of decay, heavy and thick, sickened him. When he tried breathing through his mouth, he almost gagged. The air tasted like a mouthful of spoiled meat. The horse's hooves made a soft squishing as rotten, ripe things broke open under them. Matt leaned out of his saddle and spewed until his stomach was empty. Rand sought the void, but calmness was little help against the burning bile that kept creeping up his throat. Empty or not, Matt heaved again a mile later, bringing up nothing, and yet again after that. Egwene looked as if she wanted to be sick too, swallowing constantly. And Nynaeve's face was a white mask of determination, her jaw set and her eyes fixed on Moraine's back. The wisdom would not admit to feeling ill unless the Aes Sedai did first, but Rand did not think she would have to wait long. Moraine's eyes were tight and her lips pale. Despite the heat and damp, Loyal wrapped a scarf around his nose and mouth. When he met Rand's gaze, the Ogier's outrage and disgust were plain in his eyes.
I had heard,
he began, his voice muffled by the wool, then stopped to clear his throat with a grimace.
Father, it tastes like pho. I had heard and read about the blight, but nothing could describe.
His gesture somehow took in the smell as well as the eye-sickening growth.
That even the Dark One should do this to trees. Fah!
The warder was not affected, of course, at least not that Rand could see, but to his surprise, neither was Perrin. Or rather, not in the way the rest of them were. The big youth glared at the obscene forest through which they rode, as he might have at an enemy. Or the banner of an enemy. He caressed the axe at his belt as if unaware of what he was doing, and muttered to himself, half growling in a way that made the hair on Rand's neck stir. Even in full sunlight, his eyes glowed, golden and fierce. The heat did not abate as the bloody sun fell toward the horizon. In the distance to the north, mountains rose, higher than the mountains of mist, black against the sky. Sometimes an icy wind from the sharp peaks gusted far enough to reach them. The torrid humidity leached away most of the mountain chill, but what remained was winter cold compared to the swelter it replaced, if just for a moment. The sweat on Rand's face seemed to flash into beads of ice. As the wind died, the beads melted again, running angry lines down his cheeks, and the thick heat returned harder than before by comparison. For the instant the wind surrounded them, it swept away the fetter, yet he would have done without that, too, if he could have. The cold was the chill of the grave, and it carried the dusty must of an old tomb newly opened.
"We cannot reach the mountains by nightfall," Lan said, "and it is dangerous to move at night, even for a warder alone."
"There is a place not far off," Moraine said. "It will be a good omen for us to camp there." The warder gave her a flat look, then nodded reluctantly.
"Yes, we must camp somewhere. It might as well be there."
"The Eye of the World was beyond the high passes when I found it," Moraine said. "Better to cross the Mountains of Doom in full daylight at noon, when the Dark One's powers in this world are weakest."
"You talk as if the Eye isn't always in the same place."
Egwene spoke to the Aes Sedai, but it was Loyal who answered.
"No two among the Ogier have found it in exactly the same place. The Green Man seems to be found where he is needed, but it has always been beyond the high passes. They are treacherous, the high passes, and haunted by creatures of the Dark One."
"We must reach the passes before we need worry about them," Lan said. "Tomorrow we will be truly into the Blight."
Ran looked at the forest around him, every leaf and flower diseased, every creeper decaying as it grew, and he could not repress a shudder. If this isn't truly the Blight, what is? Lan turned them westward at an angle to the sinking sun. The warder maintained the pace he had set before, but there was reluctance in the set of his shoulders. The sun was a sullen red ball just touching the treetops when they crested a hill and the warder drew rein. Beyond them to the west lay a network of lakes, the waters glittering darkly in the slanting sunlight, like beads of random size on a necklace of many strings. In the distance, circled by the lakes, stood jagged-topped hills, thick in the creeping shadows of evening. For one brief instant, the sun's rays caught the shattered tops, and Rand's breath stilled. Not hills. The broken remnants of seven towers. He was not sure if anyone else had seen it. The sight was gone as quickly as it came. The warder was dismounting, his face as lacking in emotion as a stone.
"Couldn't we camp down by the lakes?" Nynaeve asked, patting her face with her kerchief.
"It must be cooler down by the water."
"Light," Matt said. "I'd just like to stick my head in one of them. I might never take it out."
Just then something roiled the waters of the nearest lake, the dark water phosphorescing as a huge body rolled beneath the surface. Length on man-thick length sent ripples spreading, rolling on and on until at last a tail rose, waving a point like a wasp's stinger for an instant in the twilight, at least five spans into the air. All along that length, fat tentacles writhed like monstrous worms, as many as a centipede's legs. It slid slowly beneath the surface and was gone, only the fading ripples to say it had ever been. Rand closed his mouth and exchanged a look with Perrin. Perrin's yellow eyes were as disbelieving as he knew his own must be. Nothing that big could live in a lake that size.
Those couldn't have been hands on those tentacles. They couldn't have been.
"On second thought," Matt said faintly, "I like it right here just fine."
"I will set guarding wards around this hill," Moraine said. She had already dismounted from Aldeeb. "A true barrier would draw the attention we do not want like flies to honey. But if any creation of the Dark One or anything that serves the Shadow comes within a mile of us, I will know."
"I'd be happier with the barrier," Matt said as his boots touched the ground. "Just as long as it kept that thing on the other side."
"Oh, do be quiet, Matt," Egwene said curtly, at the same time as Nynaeve spoke.
"And have them waiting for us when we leave in the morning? You are a fool, Matrim Cawthon."
Matt glowered at the two women as they climbed down, but he kept his mouth shut. As he took Bella's reins, Rand shared a grin with Perrin. For a moment, it was almost like being home, having Matt saying what he should not at the worst possible time. Then the smile faded from Perrin's face. In the twilight, his eyes did glow, as if they had a yellow light behind them. Rand's grin slipped away, too.
"It isn't like home at all."
Rand and Matt and Perrin helped Lan unsaddle and hobble the horses while the others began setting up the camp. Loyal muttered to himself as he set up the warder's tiny stove, but his thick fingers moved deftly. Egwene was humming as she filled the tea kettle from a bulging water bag. Rand no longer wondered why the warder had insisted on bringing so many full water skins. Setting the bay's saddle in line with the others, he unfastened his saddlebags and blanket roll from the cantle, turned, and stopped with a tingle of fear. The Ogier and the women were gone. So was the stove and all the wicker panniers from the pack horse. The hilltop was empty except for evening shadows. With a numb hand, he fumbled for his sword, dimly hearing Matt curse. Perrin had his axe out, his shaggy head swiveling to find the danger.
"Sheepherders," Lan muttered.
Unconcernedly, the warder strode across the hilltop, and at his third step, he vanished. Rand exchanged wide-eyed looks with Matt and Perrin, and then they were all darting for where the warder had disappeared. Abruptly, Rand skidded to a halt, taking another step when Matt ran into his back. Egwene looked up from setting the kettle atop the tiny stove. Nynaeve was closing the mantle on a second lit lantern. They were all there, Moraine sitting cross-legged, Lan lounging on an elbow, Loyal taking a book out of his pack. Cautiously, Rand looked behind him. The hillside was there as it had been, the shadowed trees, the lakes beyond sinking into darkness. He was afraid to step back, afraid they would all disappear again, and perhaps this time he would not be able to find them. Edging carefully around him, Perrin let out a long breath. Moraine noticed the three of them standing there gaping. Perrin looked abashed and slipped his axe back into the heavy belt loop as if he thought no one might notice. A smile touched her lips.
"It is a simple thing," she said, "a bending, so any eye looking at us sees around us instead. We cannot have the eyes that will be out there seeing our lights tonight, and the blight is no place to be in the dark."
"Moraine Sedai says I might be able to do it." Egwene's eyes were bright. "She says I can handle enough of the one power right now."
"Not without training, child," Moraine cautioned.
"The simplest matter concerning the one power can be dangerous to the untrained and to those around them." Perrin snorted, and Egwene looked so uncomfortable that Rand wondered if she had already been trying her abilities. Nynaeve set down the lantern. Together with the tiny flame of the stove, the pair of lanterns gave a generous light.
"When you go to Tar Valon, Egwene," she said carefully, "perhaps I'll go with you."
The look she gave Moraine was strangely defensive.
"It will do her good to see a familiar face among strangers. She'll need someone to advise her besides Aes Sedai."
"Perhaps that would be for the best, Wisdom," Moraine said simply.
Egwene laughed and clapped her hands.
"Oh, that will be wonderful! And you, Rand, you'll come too, won't you?"
He paused in the act of sitting across the stove from her, then slowly lowered himself. He thought her eyes had never been bigger or brighter, or more like pools that he could lose himself in. Spots of color appeared in her cheeks, and she gave a smaller laugh.
"Perrin, Matt, you two will come, won't you? We'll all be together."
Matt gave a grunt that could have signified anything, and Perrin only shrugged, but she took it for assent.
"You see, Rand, we'll all be together."
"Light, but a man could drown in those eyes and be happy doing it."
Embarrassed, he cleared his throat.
"Do they have sheep in Tar Valon?
That's all I know, herding sheep and growing tobacco."
"I believe," Moraine said, "that I can find something for you to do in Tar Valon. For all of you. Not herding sheep, perhaps, but something you will find interesting."
"There," Egwene said, as if it were settled. "I know. I will make you my warder when I'm an Aes Sedai. You would like being a warder, wouldn't you?"
"My warder?"
She sounded sure, but he saw the question in her eyes. She wanted an answer, needed it.
"I'd like being your warder," he said. "She's not for you, nor you for her. Why did Min have to tell me that?"
Darkness came down heavily, and everyone was tired. Loyal was the first to roll over and ready himself for sleep, but others followed soon after. No one used their blankets except for a pillow. Moraine had put something in the oil of the lamps that dispelled the stench of the blight from the hilltop, but nothing diminished the heat. The moon gave a wavering, watery light, but the sun might have been at its zenith for all the cool the night had. Rand found sleep impossible, even with the Aes Sedai stretched out not a span away to shield his dreams. It was the thick air that kept him awake. Loyal's soft snores were a rumble that made Perrin's seem non-existent, but they did not stop weariness from claiming the others. The warder was still awake, seated not far from him with his sword across his knees, watching the night. To Rand's surprise, so was Nynaeve. The wisdom looked at Lan silently for a long time, then poured a cup of tea and brought it to him. When he reached out with a murmur of thanks, she did not let go right away.
I should have known you would be a king, she said quietly.
Her eyes were steady on the warder's face, but her voice trembled slightly. Lan looked back at her just as intently. It seemed to Rand that the warder's face actually softened.
I am not a king, Nynaeve. Just a man. A man without as much to his name as even the meanest farmer's croft.
Nynaeve's voice steadied.
Some women don't ask for land or gold. Just the man.
And the man who would ask her to accept so little would not be worthy of her. You are a remarkable woman, as beautiful as the sunrise, as fierce as a warrior. You are a lioness wisdom.
A wisdom seldom weds.
She paused to take a deep breath, as if steeling herself.
But if I go to Tar Valon, it may be that I will be something other than a wisdom.
Aes Sedai marry as seldom as wisdoms. Few men can live with so much power in a wife, dimming them by her radiance, whether she wishes to or not.
Some men are strong enough. I know one such.
If there could have been any doubt, her look left none as to whom she meant.
All I have is a sword, and a war I cannot win, but can never stop fighting.
I've told you I care nothing for that. Light, you've made me say more than is proper already. Will you shame me to the point of asking you?
I will never shame you.
The gentle tone, like a caress, sounded odd to Rand's ears and the warder's voice, but it made Nynaeve's eyes brighten.
I will hate the man you choose because he is not me, and love him if he makes you smile. No woman deserves the sure knowledge of widow's black as her bride price, you least of all.
He set the untouched cup on the ground and rose.
I must check the horses.
Nynaeve remained there, kneeling, after he had gone.
Sleep or no, Rand closed his eyes. He did not think the wisdom would like it if he watched her cry.